County Administrator's Report. Oh, we could go to the County Attorney. Or we could go to the Finance Director's probably ready.
I was going to pass. The only thing I was going to say tonight, and she's already gone, is Julie. The opening game of the Syracuse and Cornell basketball season is tomorrow night, and I noticed that Julie was wearing her orange jacket, and I wanted to thank her publicly, but she already left. So and that was the extent of my report tonight.
Can we put that in the minutes, please? Thank you, Joe. Any questions for Joe? All right. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
No report.
No report.
Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Any questions for Jonathan? No? Good. All right.
I have two things to report tonight for the finance report. The first is the September 2013 sales tax report, which can be found in your agenda on page 4 and 5. If you view the first table, which is the sales tax distribution summary, you'll see that the sales tax distributions for the third quarter were up 4.44% compared to last year. Year-to-date distributions for the county's portion totaled $24,212,048 compared to $23,644,118 in 2012. This represents an increase of 2.4%. That's the year-to-date. According to the sales tax distribution summary, we are at 74.9% of budget. If you look at the next table, which is the quarterly and various years table, so Tompkins County's sales tax receipts, please look at the second column. The county's portion of sales taxes for the third quarter was $8,454,862 compared to $8,095,755, an increase of 4.44%. This amount represents the highest quarter the county's had over the past 5 years, the highest third quarter. So that was all good news for us tonight. The second item I like to present is something I shared with a number of legislators, county administrator, is on the sale of bonds. Last week, the Fed announced it would not begin tapering its bond purchase program until December, and maybe not even until March of next year. That's led to a relatively quiet markets and a 4 to 9 basis point improvement in the municipal bond market over the past week. The county with a bond rating of AA1 stable sold $8,935,000 of public improvement refunding serial bonds on November 5th, 2013 at a net interest rate of 1.268%. The term of the bonds is 7 years or until February 15th, 2020, and it does not stretch out the term of the existing bonds. The county achieved savings of $734,212 over the life of the issue, and it saves the county approximately $105,000 each and every fiscal year. The net present value savings of the refunding was 7.52%. The county typically uses a threshold of 3% in present value savings before proceeding with a refunding. When we analyzed this refunding last month in October, the estimated savings was $552,199 and a net present value savings of 5.53%. When the same analysis was done in September of this year, the savings was estimated at $536,011 with a net present value savings of 5.36%. So by waiting each and every month over the last 2 or 3 months, as interest rates went lower, our savings went higher. So timing is everything, and we were very fortunate to enter the market at this point in time. These results are considerably different and better than when we issued bonds this past June, when the county sold bonds at a net interest rate of 3.399%. And that concludes my report.
Great news. Thank you very much, Rick. Pat?
I just wondered, do we have a copy of those figures anyplace? Did we get that?
I can send you an email, yes. And I believe it's already, a lot of it is already on the website. I think Marcia put it out today.
Yeah, she put it out as a press release. You would have gotten an email from Marcia Lynch as a press release.
Probably haven't seen it yet.
But I'll make sure you get an email too, Pat. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions for Rick? Frank?
Just, does this now mean that with the budget not finalized that you're going to put back in for a raise?
You said if the markets went the other way, then I'd have to
pay back.
Then I'd have to pay back.
I think so. You got a legitimate reason here, Rick.
Good. Frank, you're out of order.
There's a reason Frank's not on. There's a reason Frank's not on the budget committee. Kathy Luce.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Anything? Okay. Good. All right. We've done the consent agenda. I want to go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you very much. We had a meeting the other afternoon and made a recommendation to the whole legislature. And I understand that no one was committed to what we recommended. But we did allow it to be moved forward. And I'm going to read the title. It's Resolution G. Revised as adopted by the committee. We're scheduling a public hearing pursuant to the not-for-profit corporation law section 1411 to consider the sale of Beechtree Care Center to the Tompkins County Development Corporation. And I would move that.
Seconded by Brian. Brian. Discussion.
And as you look around the room, a few of the people who were at the meeting on Friday are here again this evening to answer any questions that people have. And Joe, of course, Joe and Jonathan also have been intimately involved with it.
Mike.
I would just say, you know, we've been briefed as a group on this. I think it was a surprise to all of us that were involved in this to begin with. Except maybe Frank, who was around when that happened. But I think we ought to go proceed rapidly to public hearing, and let's hear what the public has to say.
All right. Anything else? Pam.
Well, this isn't the point at which to raise this, but Julie asked that I do, and maybe we could, if it's not the right moment, then we can talk about it at a different time. But it has to do with the environmental, the phase one environmental study and the possibility of having that done as part of this process of due diligence. And my understanding is that our county attorney suggested that wouldn't be a good idea, and I just want to express my concern about that. So I don't know if people want me not to talk about this now. I would be more than willing not to, but I felt as if I needed to raise it. So I mean, I have more to say, but if this is not the appropriate moment, then I won't continue.
Well, I think especially since Dooley's not here, she would want to have this conversation later anyway. So I think since this motion is about setting the public hearing, we would have the hearing at our next legislature meeting and then certainly have discussion following the hearing, because then we'd have the action items on our plate next meeting.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right, that's fine. I can just send an email out to everybody and explain, because I actually also raised this issue. It wasn't just Julie, but she was the one who asked me to ask it. But I will just send an email out, or maybe Julie and I will together, about why we find this to be important.
Jonathan?
Yeah, we'll send, we have had this discussion, and we'll send an email out as to why we believe that would be the wiser course of action.
Okay. That we wait to have a conversation, or
no, that and addressing the issue of why we would recommend or not recommend actually doing a phase one.
Okay.
So we'll send a brief email out as to why we think that's the case.
So we'll have all the information in front of us, and then and Dooley with us when we have a conversation.
Right.
Joe, did you want to add anything?
No,
that was it. Leslin, and then Will.
Jonathan, I hear this wasn't my question originally, but I hear about the email going out. Is that information that the public will have as well?
Well, we'll send it out to you, but there's nothing confidential about it. I mean, it's certainly something that could be shared with the public.
Thank you. I will hold my question for the next time.
Okay. Will, and then Kathy Luce.
Thank you, Martha. Just so I understand the time frame, we will have a public hearing at our next meeting of the legislature, and then from there, assuming that we vote basically to move it to the IDA, that would happen fairly quickly. And I'm just wondering when would be the appropriate time to really address some of the issues beside that. For example, it was brought to our attention that that there are labor issues currently under the current management that may need to be at least discussed. And I'm just wondering when the appropriate time would be.
Thank you, Will.
Well, I think at the next meeting. I mean, I think that's part of hearing from the public and, you know, take as much time as we need to next meeting. And I think the staff is gathering information as well. And so we'll have more information next time.
Thank you.
Kathy Luce and Jim.
Thank you. It was actually at the... I'd just like to say that I'm concerned about the environmental issues and also about the labor issues. And I understand people wanting to talk about it later, but one of the lessons I got from the privilege of the floor tonight is that sometimes when you put things off, people think that it was a setup and that they didn't have a chance to hear about it or weigh in on it. So just as I mentioned at the last meeting, I won't go into it as extensively tonight, but I do want to say that I'm concerned that the county, due to the way that state law is set up and not being an attorney, I'm not exactly sure about this, and this is why I asked, maybe either trying to sell a pig in a poke, to use a good old Texas expression that everybody understands when they first hear it, or that we might end up actually getting a pig in a poke because we're going to be selling something that we'll end up having to pay for later. So we would be responsible for it and having to pay for it at any time that we had ownership, and that's the issue, which even if it's for a millisecond or a nanosecond, it becomes an issue. So I know that people don't want to talk about this, but it's, you know, their tax dollars that we would be delaying talking about if there was, for example, a cleanup or something like that. So I had to speak about the unspeakable because I think the public deserves to have an inkling of what we're talking about in private. And I also would like people to know that the labor concerns are an issue, especially in a community that talks about the desire for a livable wage and a good opportunities for people to have good jobs with good benefits. The notion that the new employer might be, for example, trying to become more profitable by lowering wages or even raising hours but having fewer full-time employees or changing benefits, for example, health care benefits or others. These are all things that I'm pretty sure most of us here would be concerned about, especially if they knew, as Pam reported earlier, privatization comes at a cost. And if they knew that the county had any kind of influence on that, I think that they would, as the public and certainly my colleagues, would want to weigh in on that. Now, what I've been told is, don't worry, it's all going to be dealt with on the IDA. Well, I've been a member of the IDA, and I'm not now, probably for reasons that I disagreed probably once too often with public handouts to corporations that I felt were not acting in the best interest of the public, that they were increasing their profits on the backs of working people. So at this moment in time, it is important to me to know that people that are involved with the IDA, and I know that that this isn't that step in the process. And, of course, that's what's fun about a shell game like this, is that we're not selling it to the IDA, right? We're selling it to a nonprofit. Very cool, quick, slick move. Well, it's the way things are done. And I don't think anybody here did that on purpose. It's just the way that it's done. I don't like it. But so people can say to me, and you may think I'm digressing, but I'm not, that really at this point we have nothing to say. I would disagree, and I would say that having even comments about this at the meeting right now is a helpful way to let the company know that this is something that the community is concerned about and that some of the elected legislators are concerned about. When it does come to the IDA, I know that the majority of the IDA may or may not be members of the legislature, and there may or may not be that may not have any significance in this setting because they're not, how can I say this, the IDAA is independent of the legislature. So, as you can see, that's where my concern comes from. This is really the last shot we have to really say something about this. So if people want to wait and say it later, that's fine. I'll say it later, but I'm concerned about this. I would really like for us to find a way to send a message, a strong message, to the company that our community values say that we would really like to keep good jobs in this community. We know we need to keep Beechtree here, but can't they figure out a way to settle their some of their concerns in this contract in a more equitable way with the employees, because it's a public good, and it's going to cost us some money in the long run, especially if there's a tax abatement, and we'd like to see that money be plowed back into the community with higher wages, higher benefits, and a good jobs. So personally and as a county legislator, I'd like to tell the company that that's my concern, and that I hope that in their negotiations they take into account as, that as a good community members, as you know they purport to be and as I believe they want to be, they should take this into account and deal fairly and in good faith with the union in these negotiations so that we can have an organization that we'll be proud of running this Beechtree nursing home. Thank you.
Jim, I trust you will.
I am going to decline right now. I think any comments that I might make are more appropriate on the other two resolutions that we would be dealing with on the 19th. So I believe Leslin was next.
All right. Well, I would like, then since I wasn't at the budget meeting on Friday, I didn't hear a report about it, so I didn't want to characterize it. But I will ask Joe or you. Would you let us know? Tell us what we were told. The committee was told about the negotiations that are ongoing.
One is they are ongoing. I recall that they've had two negotiating sessions, and another one will happen. I think both parties characterized the negotiations as good faith, that there have been some changes that have been implemented as the new group that's operating the nursing home under receivership, as they have come in and assumed operations. It's my understanding the wage rates have not been changed. There are some changes in work rules that exist out there. There are some changes in benefit levels, all of which, again, are being negotiated right now. We also heard that I believe all the employees that had been employed by the prior operator have been rehired and are at work. I think we will have an opportunity to look through kind of the side-by-side on before and after. But, again, everything is in negotiations right now that are required between the union and the employer. Clearly, the union will continue to be the union at Beechtree. So we heard all those things at the meeting, and again, as we proceed here, I think we can get into some of the specifics. We have to be a little careful because we don't want to enter into the realm of their negotiations. But I think some of the uncertainty that exists we might be able to address by your next meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Joe. Leslin, Will, Pam, and then Carol.
So I haven't been poking any pigs, but I have this poking in my stomach because I have immediate relatives who are residents of Beechtree, and I'm having this real feeling here that whatever discussions or whatever the outcomes of whatever might happen could affect me one way or another. And so I wanted to disclose that and ask of the county attorney if I should remove myself from this conversation. Because, I got a lot to say, but I'd like to remove myself.
I do not see a conflict there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now I'll ask my question of Joe. Thanks for the update on what you heard. Were there any employees at this meeting who were able to share their views on what was going on?
No, there was a union representative who may still be here, and he represented some concerns that had been expressed by several employees. I think there you referred to maybe 50 employees at that time, so there, he represented that to the committee on Friday.
Thank you. Will. No, I had all the pokings.
So I became aware of this as the many of us, that as sort of a pre-meeting information session, and perhaps it was discussed at greater length during the budget committee. What I remember from that presentation was that essentially we were transferring ownership to the IDA for a dollar, and that they would be then selling it for a dollar. What I only learned after that presentation, I was saying that's a great deal, was that what they were also acquiring was the debt, which was the company that would be the operator would be taking on about $5 million worth of debt. Is that correct, Joe?
I would have to refer that to the representative of the owners who are here in terms of what they've assumed in terms of debt.
Okay. So who set those terms?
Mr. Weir, do you want to address? Or?
Hi, everybody.
It's not on.
Can you please sit, sit over there? Sit at the end. And introduce yourself.
Of course. My name is Dave Camerata. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Upstate Services Group, who's also a partner in the BTRNC LLC. The receiver that was appointed by the New York State Department of Health for the operation of Beach Street Care Center. As far as debt is concerned, the mortgage, there's still a mortgage on the property of about $4.1 million that is in the process with HUD, and we'll be assuming that debt on that property. The other debts, there's New York State Department of Health debt, and I don't have all the specific numbers, but we can certainly get those to you. But there's certain liabilities and certain debt that we did assume.
Okay. And has there been an evaluation of assessment or appraisal of the property at any point? Do we know?
I don't have
an appraisal for the private acquisition. So what you're talking about?
Well, the value of the operation, the land, the buildings.
I don't have that information tonight to share with you. I don't know exactly what those numbers are.
Okay. And who actually established the transfer cost that we would be moving this from the IDA to you? Who set those terms?
You mean you're talking about the dollar transaction?
Yes. Essentially giving it for free.
Well, and recall, we are giving something that is there only for the moment because of an understanding made in 1983.
Right.
So that was the way the proposal was presented to us. We've looked at that. So it certainly has gone through our filters with our bond counsel, with county attorney, with me, to confirm that a dollar transaction is appropriate in this case, because we look at the potential value of that building if we held ownership of it. If we held title instead of letting it pass through, and as we said during the briefing and during the budget meeting last Friday, it is not an asset to the county. It is a significant liability to the county, as reflected in the fact that many counties who have nursing homes are doing what they can now to dispose of those nursing homes. So in terms of the value to the county and also the value to be expected if it were to be put on the market, remember the value of this nursing home relates as much to the holder of the license as it does to the brick and mortar, the value of brick and mortar at the nursing home. And the license is currently held by the receiver. So in terms of the market value of that property, given the current state of who controls the license and who's operating the nursing home. Again, in terms of the market value of the property, it has no market value if we put it up for sale. So with both of those things in mind, particularly the fact that the last thing we want to become is the operator of a nursing home, the dollar transaction made great sense to us. That's why we're recommending it to you.
Okay. And I certainly understand that concern. And I also understand that we want to retain a good, viable nursing facility downtown where not only Lesman's relatives but many others can also partake. The question I posed when you first raised this, though, was how is it that a for-profit company could operate and make this work that in a way that the nonprofit could not? And maybe Mr. Camerata has something to offer in terms of why does that work for you folks where it was not working for the previous owners?
We are operators and receivers in 15 skilled nursing facilities currently in New York State, so our buying power allows for our expenses to be lower in that regard. We have a corporate office that is efficient and has expertise in delivering quality of care, delivering reimbursement initiatives, buying power, like I said, insurances, those kinds of things where the efficiencies that are enjoyed with a larger group aren't necessarily enjoyed in a building that has one owner. So when we have mock surveys, we have different things clinically that we can look at and bring to the table that a single owner may have to go out and purchase to get ready for a Department of Health survey or to have a reimbursement company come in and assist with driving the reimbursement side of operations. So this particular situation at Beach Street Care Center, the Department of Health stepped in because it was in a position where it was going to fail and it was going to close. So the appointment of the receiver was related to finances. And if the receiver wasn't appointed, chances are the building would have closed.
So my obvious concern is that the savings are not unduly borne by the workers. And I understand had it closed, they wouldn't have jobs. But I do not want their situation, their working situation, to go down. And I'm glad that your company does recognize the union, that you are bargaining in good faith. But to the extent that we have any say in it, I do not want their conditions to get worse. And it sounds like they have, at least temporarily. So
that's not what we want either. We're in the business of taking care of people. And that's not just the residents and the patients we're charged with their care. That's also our employees. The wage rates remain the same. We hired 100% of the employees that were at Beach Street Care Center were hired by us. The changes that had to be made were in benefits, changing overtime from after 8 hours to over 40 hours. The health insurance benefits changed a bit, but it's very comparable to what they had. The we offer a 401k, and it was a 403b. We have the personal time, the vacation time that's very comparable to what they had before. We're certainly bargaining in good faith. We had two sessions already. Our next session is on November 22nd. There's a good representation of the employees on that committee. There's seven or eight on that side of it that bring a lot of different disciplines to the table, a lot of different households to the table, and what their needs are. We told them, I mean, we don't have busfuls of people that are going to come here and work. So the labor pool that we have that's been there for an extended period of time, we want to keep. This is what we do. And the care that's being provided right now, we think is pretty good. And, you know, as far as labor's concerned, we're as concerned about it as anybody sitting around this table. And we need those folks to take care of the residents that we have.
Thank you.
I've got Pam, Carol, Jim, and Peter.
Well, from my understanding, there are a number of long-term employees there. And that speaks well to how that place has been run in terms of working there and in terms of patient care. I would assume that employees who spend a long time there would be people who care about who they take care of. And so I think we all have a tremendous interest in making sure that this continues to be that way. I, I am hoping that the reason that, I, in spite of what the representative from the machinist said, that employees are not here because they chose not to be here, not because they were frightened of for their jobs to be here. So I'm taking it on face value. I'm taking you on your word that this is the case, and that the case is that you're negotiating in good faith and that we're going to move forward because this is an important we are involved in this on the county legislature. We have a role to play here. And as somebody who believes that working people should be making a decent wage, I would have a very hard time supporting this if I felt that wasn't the case. And I have no reason at this point to feel that way. But I will say that this community, this is an important issue for the people in this community. And so the other thing I wanted to mention was that I hope that at our meeting next time, when at our legislative meeting, that when we bring this up past the public hearing, that it won't be all of a sudden saying, well, we don't have time to talk about this. Because I think what we have already seen is that there are several important issues that people are concerned about. And so I hope we will all be patient with the process and allow the discussion to take place at the next meeting, because I have yet another issue, and I'm not saying it because I'm trying to be restrainful, but I don't want to be in the situation where it doesn't get a full discussion. So I'm just sending that out as a notice.
We hear you. All right, good. Carol, Jim, Peter.
So I share these same concerns that if the county is playing a role in this, that a company coming in understand and have the time between now and when we have to make a final decision to understand what our concerns are and how deep they run about the treatment of workers in our community. And you know, I did hear a little bit more being said on Friday than has come out here. I understand that, you know, union negotiations can't take place in public, but we've now invited the company manager up to the table, and I find it a little bizarre that you're sitting here and the union representative is sitting in the back. So I just want to offer you the opportunity, if you had anything to add, in terms of the character. So you know, both Joe has summarized the discussion, and I'm sorry,
Dave
has had the opportunity to characterize what was said on Friday. And if you'd like that same opportunity, I want to make sure you have the opportunity to come up to that other chair and let us know, because as I understand it, it was not just about the hourly wages. It was about the hours and the ability to earn a total wage at the end of the week because of the allocation of hours or time or overtime, I'm not sure, and of other sick, vacation, other kind of benefits that are involved. And I understand you can't go into real specifics, but.
Yeah. Jim, I've been happy to have you come up. Go ahead. But Carol's right. We're not in a position to negotiate. We don't want to negotiate these issues here. I don't think either of you do. We are, honestly, we don't get involved. This body doesn't negotiate our own employees, you know, benefits, so salaries and benefits. But
I don't know. If you don't mind, it's just that I just found it odd we had invited the company up to the table to comment on the labor issues.
There were some specific
really
questions.
Didn't invite them to the table. We told them to stand back there, but it works better here.
Well, there were some specific questions.
Let him speak.
I don't have any specific questions or comments. David is right. We are bargaining. I do believe he's going to bargain in good faith. My concern is the employer came in and made changes prior to bargaining, just came in and to his word, hourly wages stayed the same, but to total earnings has definitely not stayed the same. The employees are paying more for their health care. They have less vacation, less sick time, a reduction in most every area. Educational programs that we had in the contract so these employees could further their education and move up through has been gone. When we're still in negotiations, with all due respect, maybe some of that stuff can come back. But my concern was it's such a drastic change initially before we even bargained.
So, thank you. I just want to thank you for saying that. And, boy, it sure would make my vote easier if you guys came back having agreed by the time this is coming back to us, because we'd love to keep this facility here and keep make sure that you are happy.
I don't think the time allows that. But, Jim, I got Jim, Peter, and then Brian.
If I could just make one more statement, just so everybody understands the context of the Department of Health's appointment of a receiver. Because it was for finances, the Department of Health is going to keep a good eye on us. And in order for the receivership to go through the certificate of need process to become an established operator, you have to show financial feasibility. So there were things that we had to do initially because the building was in a situation where it was going to close because of finances. They just weren't going to make it. So we have to show and demonstrate financial feasibility over an extended period of time. So the certificate of need, the CON process, we can become the established operators. Our goal is to be here long term. This is what we do, and I plan on negotiating at the table with Mr. Johnson as many times as it needs to happen. I'm hopeful that we'll have something done relatively quickly, but quickly with negotiations with attorney schedules and everybody's schedule, it could be 90 days. So we have to show the financial feasibility of the building in order to move it forward.
Okay, I've got Jim, Peter, and then Brian.
There are two things. Number one, I am interested as a legislator and also a member of the IDA in keeping this facility open. I would not want to, and I don't believe anyone around the table would want this facility to close because of some other things that we might be involved in. All of you who know about negotiations, you have to keep in mind that the not-for-profit is operating on a contract. There's a reason that the not-for-profit is not operating in a profit mode to be able to keep themselves going. I'm not certain it's the contract, but clearly that's part of anything moving forward. You have to look at the contract and see where it affects the possible outcome in terms of profitability. All of you who are knowledgeable about labor negotiations understand the car companies in the United States of America and how they had to go back to the table to turn themselves profitable. I think it's not a good thing to say that the county is giving this away free. We're giving it away with a $4 million debt. That's hardly free. And I would hope that we may move this forward and then at the next meeting with the two other resolutions end up having this discussion in an extended manner at that point.
Peter.
Yeah, Frank, I'm confused. It does seem to me after listening to it that we might want to do a lot of things to make things better for the working staff, but it does not strike me that we're in a very strong negotiating position. If they decide to reject us, then we own this thing and we own the debt of however much dollars it is, and that's not a position that we want to be in. So, when I said I'm confused, I meant the following. I find it interesting that this thing is worth zero. I mean, it's worth a dollar to them because that's what they're paying for it. But I wonder how come it comes so close to that. Either it should be worth, you know, $1,000 or minus $1,000. It's interesting that it comes out that way. Anyway, it sounds a lot to me like the conversation we had about the CHA. And I think we made the right decision there, and this sounds to me like roughly the same thing. You know, we ought to use whatever strength we have in the negotiation, but in the end, I think everybody knows what we're going to do. So.
Joe or Jonathan, you want to answer that?
I can. Just a couple of quick things. With other counties that have sold the nursing home, the traditional thing you put in a deed is a dollar because it's consideration and needed. They, in fact, lose money because it costs them more money than they get.
I understand.
So that's why, just to be a caution, when Jay or the Department of Assessment will put a value on it at some point, the value will not be a dollar, the value will be something, but it will be based largely on the value of that license and the ability to make money from that license, which the county does not have.
Brian.
Well, I was just going to say that I'm really not comfortable sitting here basically discussing a collective bargaining agreement between two non-government entities. And we've heard from both parties that they and the other are bargaining in good faith, and we have to take them at their word at that and not use that as leverage not to do something that, as Peter rightfully said, at the end of the day, we really don't have a whole lot of choice about this. That's it.
Mike.
Call a question, please.
Seconded by Pat. All in favor of calling the question?
Aye.
Sorry, raise your hands and keep them up. Opposed? That passes 8-6. So it's time to vote on the resolution, Resolution G. There's been no change to it. So just what's on in your packet, all in favor of scheduling the public hearing on November 19th in this room, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Well, thank you very much, and good luck in your negotiations.
Thank you very much.
Jim, do you have any more of a report for budget?
We have a public hearing on the 2014 budget November 12th, I believe. And is it 7 o'clock or 5:30?
7.
Here. And then on the 19th, hopefully, I think we'll vote on the budget on the 19th if anyone is still awake when it comes around that time.
All right.
And other than that, I don't have anything, and I'll save my story for November 19th, and all my compliments.
All right. Any questions for Jim? All right. Back to committee reports in order. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on November 12th at its usual time at 3:30. The agenda has been distributed. I would ask the committee members to pay particular attention to item 8B as in boy, discussion and report on the 2013 to 2017 community health assessment. This is the forecast, and it includes the improvement plan. Some of us participated at the health department in that discussion with the Board of Health. I've asked Frank to give us a review of that because of the it's a long-range process, and it's also a forecast of which direction we're going to take, excuse me, with the health department. And I'm relying on those of you that are sitting around this table to make sure this happens because I won't be here. And I'll be here to haunt you if you don't see that this happens. A couple of housekeeping items. If you missed it, there's been a lot of concern about the SNAP food stamp item and the lack of passage of the farm bill. It's had a negative effect on what we can do in this county regarding food stamps. As a matter of fact, it's any county. So I'm going to ask for Patricia to give us an update on that. But because of the passage, the reinstatement of the budget and the process, we didn't have to face cuts to WIC and any, pardon me, any other program. But remember, that date expires January 14th. And once again, I'm not going to be here on January 14th. So anything that affects, I'm probably going to rely on Joe to make sure that you whip the committee into shape so that anything affecting FoodNet and WIC, because the feds may start tinkering with that process again, please be aware of the effect on us locally, including the SNAP program. Tomorrow night, the HospiCare is celebrating having their annual dinner. It's going to be out at Celebrations. You all should have received an invitation to that. And you had on your desks, or I'm sorry, you had in your mailboxes a card like this with a little lapel pin. Yes, Kathy's got hers. I see Carol's got hers. It's for National Runaway Prevention Month. And we might be bringing a resolution to the board before the end of the year, although November is the month that they want us to at least acknowledge it. We have over 800 kids in the county that are runaway youth in this county going back to 2011. So they wanted to focus some attention on that. I think, under the Health Committee report, I just want to mention something about Beechtree because it's a health facility. Because you cut me off, Mike, before I could ask my question. Jim, with those two resolutions that are coming to us during the public hearing,
yes.
Could we, if there's any backup material to that stuff, can we get clarification, and maybe Joe can put a paragraph together on what exactly our role is, or maybe Jonathan can. I know you've explained it verbally, but maybe something for that meeting as to what really is the county's role in all of this.
We will get you something. There's perhaps a letter from Beastry where they put in a thing explaining what they want us to do and why, and that might be the best thing, but we'll take a look.
Otherwise, we'll have another three-hour conversation about it.
We'll have that anyway.
We will anyway.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Frank. Any questions for Frank? I'll just make a note, Frank, that the SNAP program did have a cut of 5% last week because the the supplement that had been put in as part of the stimulus program. The ARRA funding from a few years back ended Friday. So that supplemental funding went away as of Friday.
And it's impacting us even more negatively.
All right. Thank you very much, Frank. Facilities and Infrastructure, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah, we had a meeting of F&I. I'm not quite sure what we did. I don't remember anything. I think I did report last time about the Hanshaw Road project. Did I not? Or if I didn't, it's fallen behind. It was supposed to have all of the major construction work done before the season was over, but it didn't. And so Hanshaw Road will be stopped right, now or in the next week or so, and it will be returned to its two-way status until after winter's over, and it will push the completion date by a couple of months. We're very sensitive about the interaction we've had with the neighbors on that project, and we're going to hold a public meeting to tell them what's going on, listen to what questions, try to answer whatever questions they have. The other thing, breaking news. I'm not sure how many people know about this, but there's been a huge battle going on between TCAT and the town of Ithaca about town of Ithaca decided to, or that the supervisor in his budget decided to zero out the $50,000 annual contribution that the town of Ithaca was giving to TCAT. There was a compromise tonight, and they are giving $25,000. So Jennifer Dotson and I have been very, very much involved in that that discussion.
Bill is very excited.
What?
Can I half clap?
Yeah, you can half clap. Okay.
Did you get the check, Peter?
I just got that call that made me run out to get to my cell phone was from Jennifer Dotson telling me that that's what happened. And I was pleased that the vote was 4-3 with Rich DiPaolo voting no because he thought it was too small. So that's kind of nice. Anyway, the next meeting occurs on a very important day. On next F&I meeting will take place on November the 18th, which, if my memory is right, is what we used to call, when I was a little boy, Armistice Day, and then it got called Decoration Day, and now it's called Veterans Day.
Peter, it's the 11th, Peter, but don't worry about it.
Call it wrong day.
It's the 11th? I thought it was the 17th.
See how quick they forget.
All right, forget it, okay? I'm really sad because I have to add to it. I thought it was my daughter's birthday and my granddaughter's birthday, so that was a big day for me. Anyway.
Is the meeting on the 18th?
The meeting's on the 18th, yeah.
Okay.
And
I'm confused, Peter.
That's enough silly talk for the night.
But, Peter, about Hanshaw Road, didn't the contractor promise, or whatever the right verb is, that the cost would not change?
Yeah, the cost, it doesn't change the cost at all.
Okay. That's good. Going over into a second season. Okay, yeah. Good. Any other questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Economic Development Committee met this afternoon, right before this meeting, and it was a brief meeting, but anybody who was there has been in meetings for a long time, so I will make my report brief. We had some resolutions related to the tourism grants that I'll be bringing to our next meeting. We heard a report from Michael Stamm on the censure letter that they got from the state and why they feel it's unjustified and what they're doing in response. And we also finally spent a fair amount of time talking about the situation of informal bed and breakfasts that are more and more essentially renting out rooms online and skirting our room tax. And we actually got a letter sent in September from the organized bed and breakfast groups saying that we hereby submit the required quarterly Tompkins County return for tax occupancy in home rooms. And we do so in protest of the growing Airbnb movement and all the other rogue lodging in Tompkins County that is not in compliance with the county tax and safety code requirements. Our response to date has basically been one of education and trying to identify people that are engaged in this business, make them aware of the tax system and how they can comply, and encourage them to do this do this in a way that's informative, not punitive. And we also learned that there's a wide range. There are people that do this just very occasionally and, you know, are completely unaware that they have this obligation, and there are others that are doing it quite regularly. And Bruce Stoff, who's the new director of the Convention and Business Bureau, was telling us about it. He's been working with a student who's apparently very, very good in terms of computer databases, who's been trying to figure out how to identify the folks that are currently renting out their rooms this way and seeing if we can reach them. So that's in progress. I think the overall tenor of the effort is informative, and try to say, you know, we're all in this together and we don't want to be hurting our existing lodging units or the folks that do B&B full-time, and we certainly want to support the room tax that support so many things. And that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, I have a question. Do they pay their sales tax, or do they forget about that too, these informal places?
So they don't, my understanding, Joe, is they don't pay sales tax. It's
my understanding also.
And it varies by size, so that it's properties with fewer than 10 rooms to rent pay 3% of the room rental fee, and if you have 11 or more, you pay 5% of whatever you're charging.
Pam?
Well, I just want to add that there are also, I think it's, I don't know where the number is, about 3 rooms that you rent, that they're very serious New York State fire safety requirements, you know, metal doors, and you know, there's a lot of requirements, and so there's some serious, there's some safety issues involved in this.
Of course.
Yeah. Kathy Luce?
Thank you. I'm really glad that this is being talked about. I can attest to the fact that in Fall Creek, there's a lot of people that use, for example, Airbnb, and they'll readily tell you that it's how they pay their property taxes. And I understand that it's a safety issue, and I understand that for us it's a tax issue, and I love personally, Will, the approach that y'all are taking, that it's informative, because I think once people realize that that there may be some liability for them involved, that they'll understand the need to go through official channels on this. But at the same time, I think that this is just another illustration of how our broken property tax system makes people resort to doing things that might be personally risky for them because they want to stay in their homes.
Full disclosure, our family stayed in an Airbnb place in Massachusetts early in the summer.
Aha.
And I asked, and I said,
did you pay the room tax?
Are the taxes included? And she said, yes, and she showed me how. And, you know, it's right there on the website. And I guess Massachusetts has a system to make sure that the taxes are calculated and they're right there on your, you know, when you sign up. So I don't know if that's a way. I mean, I assume this is, we're not alone in this,
right,
you know.
Right.
And I think it's it. I hope maybe there's a fix somehow. And if the student is trying to find the Airbnb locations, I'm pretty sure he could just go and try to rent a room. I mean, you know, you could. You know,
they typically don't do the locations when they do the listings. You have to basically go through the next step.
Right, but you know, you have to. You say what city you want to go to, so, and they usually have pictures. I mean, I think, yeah.
Martha, we were wondering at the committee meeting why your name came up on that list.
Carol?
Yeah, I actually thought we had a very good discussion about that, and there are reasons to encourage people who are renting rooms informally, assuming they meet all the code requirements, to join this system that also involve a service to them. The innkeepers, when we started the room tax, which I don't remember, but Frank, you probably do, and then as we expanded it, did so because they were convinced, sometimes kicking and screaming, that there were going to be advantages to marketing jointly together, so that in addition to going out and threatening to collect, we really do also need to be talking about how then do those for whom the tax is being collected are receiving a service in return, just like the innkeepers and the bed and breakfast owners. So this may fall into the be careful what you wish for category for the B&B owners, because it's this is starting to become a significant part of the economy in some places in the country that is, you know, we shouldn't assume this will work against us. We can make it work for us along with all of the other forms in which people visit us. So I hope we take it in that spirit.
Mike.
Well, good report, but I think you failed to mention the most interesting thing that we learned today, and that was that the new employee at TCAD, is her first name Christine?
Christine.
Christine Lamb,
yes.
Announced that she had had Jim Dennis as her third grade teacher.
Who were the happiest years of her life.
My mother's old, isn't
All right. Anything else for Will? Thank you very much. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane. But first let me say, I meant to say in the conversation about the jail project, I meant to point out that it went through not just public safety, but it went through CPR as well. So two different committees spent public time talking about that project. So
we had a thorough discussion of that.
Exactly.
Nothing to report except that we meet again on Wednesday, November 13th at 3:30.
Thank you, Mike. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. We, the resolutions for our committee were included on the consent agenda tonight. We did meet on October 22nd. I just did want to mention a couple of things that were, I thought, productive in that meeting, particularly. Joe reported to us about training for our managers and supervisors that had been done during 2013, and it sounds as if we've had a very productive program and that our employees have really benefited from it, and I think people on the committee would probably agree that we felt pretty good after we had heard about it, about the initiative that has been taken for training and prospects for the future for making sure that our workforce is receiving the kind of training they need to do their jobs well and to the benefit of not only themselves but also the county. So I thought that was very interesting. I think there were maybe... I actually mentioned this other thing tonight in relation to the other discussion that the county website, Marcia reported to us, that the county website is almost completely fully live. Is that almost a complete now, Marcia? Yes. So our new county website has gone live and is complete. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do so. I think it looks really great. And our committee meets again on November 26th, I think is the date. Yes, at 10 o'clock, right here in this room.
Thank you, Pat. Frank.
Pat, or maybe Mike may be able to help me with this. Would it be the GO committee that would review the opportunity for Time Warner? You know, the same old question about, is Time Warner going to keep televising us?
Actually, we did bring that up in that meeting. I just didn't mention it as part of my report. Mike brought that to the committee. We had quite a bit of discussion about the quality of the broadcast. And it was agreed that there will be some further discussion with Time Warner to try to clarify some of the issues that were raised. And I don't know that we're ready to report anything more on it yet, but I think we'll continue to discuss that this coming month.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for Pat? Thank you. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Well, we already talked about the resolution that we passed a bit. We met on Monday, November 4th, and there are two other resolutions that will come to us the next time around rather than rush them to this agenda before, since we met after the agenda came out. We heard an interesting report from Jim Balziak, who is the staff coordinator for the Hydrilla Task Force, about sort of the status of their attempts to eradicate hydrilla. There are threats now in five locations in New York State, and while they were happy with the results of the herbicide that was applied here and how that is going, it's not gone, and there are needs now really throughout the state in the areas of collaboration, outreach, source management, and legislation. In addition to our local law, there is a state, there was the 2012 DEC invasive species regulation, and there is new proposed state regulation that we should watch out for that will establish penalties or could establish penalties
or limit penalties, limits, and prohibition. They're talking about how that would work on the sale of certain species, invasive species, to sort of try to prevent this kind of thing. It's happening with a lot of species. Hydrilla is not the only one. It was an interesting presentation. The slides for that, if you want to see them, I think Karen Fuller could give you them to you. We did hear from Joan Jerkovich about the an update, very brief update on the comprehensive plan scoping. They will be presenting that to the public, the scoping for the comprehensive plan, before, which is, you know, the outline of the document before launching into the writing of our new plan, will be presented to the community on November 18th. That meeting will be at Lifelong for 5:30 to 7:30. And in addition to housing, we talked a bit about the we heard from Katie Borghella on what she is doing with a suite of items that are the smart energy policy initiatives, which include, I mean, it's a wealth of information that I'm not going to go into all of it here, but TCOG has been involved. There are new opportunities through the Cleaner Greener program, the Cleaner Greener Southern Tier program. They are looking at possible state permit process having to do with a unified solar permit to promote solar access. And there'll be some half-day workshop in Ithaca if anybody's particularly interested in that. They are looking at, there are people looking at potential for disclosure, disclosure of energy rating information for homes as they're sold. So at the point of sale, there'd be some kind of an energy audit done, or you would have to be given an energy rating so that prospective buyers would know where does your house stand in terms of energy efficiency. And other discussion about energy conservation code enforcement. So there's a lot going on in the whole energy field that we heard. Something just began to hear about. So I think that's it. And other than the things that will come next time.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Carol. Frank.
Carol, can you on the comprehensive plan? Did you say that it's going to be initially reviewed on the 18th at Lifelong?
There is a public meeting to present. All we have done so far is scope what topics will be addressed as the planning department helps us write the plan. What topics will be part of our plan
is that
coming
the,
up.
And that's the topic meeting, of that meeting?
The topic of that meeting on the 18th is the scoping. Okay. Essentially, they have held a whole series of meetings already around the county and have the results of a survey, and they are presenting the results and what they are proposing to be the final scope for that document.
Is that are those items up on the website? Do you know?
I don't know, but I'll check and come back around if you'd like.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
I have no report for tonight, but we may have something in the month of December, so I'll keep you posted.
Thank you, Pat. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robison. Although your prior comments have to come out of the time allowed. For the
Minus 5 minutes.
Okay. Can I just ask, was it clear what was going on by the time I got done? That's what I want to know.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, they didn't want the jail expansion.
Okay, the heck with it then. We have not met since our last legislature meeting. I have been told by the deputy clerk that the regularly scheduled meeting, which was supposed to be on, what was that day again?
Armistice Day.
Yeah, there you go.
Decoration Day.
No, that's Decoration Day, Memorial Day.
Yeah, right.
Or your daughter's birthday or someday, whatever. Whatever it is.
And granddaughters.
That has been moved. We will be meeting at 5 o'clock on the 19th because we want to make that evening even extra long. So we have a couple of resolutions that we need to take care of there. So.
Okay. Okay. Any questions for Brian?
I got one.
Oh, see? There you go.
There we go. Brian.
Yes.
Did Lee get to you with any sort of a schematic on that emergency plan that we talked about during budget?
The EMT thing?
Yeah.
No, but if we happen to get out of here before 8 tomorrow morning, we're going to see him tomorrow morning, and we'll make sure and ask him.
Are you looking to get out of here before 8?
We could keep talking about that if you want. I'll help.
A couple things. Generally, I was impressed with what Brian said during our privilege of the floor. I was even more impressed with what Leslin said during our privilege of the floor. I thought both of them characterized very well what was going on about the jail reconstruction. And I was very disappointed in the people that, and that, you know, I didn't want to talk about then, the kind of accusations that were made about the sheriff, about the jail, about the county, and those are the kind of things that don't lead to a really good discourse between people. And so I really appreciated what both of them said during privilege of the floor.
He's rubbing off on me.
I think we really need to talk about this as a jail renovation and not an expansion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think on Beechtree we need to talk about the $4 million debt we're not buying. Yeah, well, right.
But, I mean, it would have been a back and forth, and,
right.
And some people didn't want to hear it.
Thank you, Jim. Anything else for Brian? All right, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean.
Woo-hoo. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet on November 26th at 3:30 in the afternoon. We're meeting on that day because the following day people will be preparing for Thanksgiving, which is when WDIC usually meets, the 27th, and we didn't want to get in the way of Thanksgiving plans. We, however, hope at WDIC that on Monday the 25th at the Budget Committee would have had a chance to look at and mull over the diversity policy so that we can have some discussion about it at WDIC the very next day. That's my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Leslin? All right, we got the minutes of October.
I was just going to say, traditionally, Leslin, the last report of the night is the longest. Are you abdicating your responsibility?
Girl, I am so exhausted right now.
Just
I'm
asking.
About to hit anybody who prolongs this meeting.
That's only when HHS is last. I'm
That's
sorry.
That's true.
Don't even try it, Dave McKenna. Don't
Minutes
say
of October 15th. Is there a motion?
Move.
Pat moves. Leslin seconds. Any comments? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, I thought it might be unanimous, but... One opposed. October 29th, minutes.
Move.
Moved by Pat, second by Frank. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
What was the question for HHS?
What?
Never mind. Sorry.
What, Nate?
No, I thought I accidentally voted opposed on that.
Yeah, Nate's opposed. No.
Not opposed.
No, not opposed. Carol's opposed. Frank, did you have a comment?
What was the question for HHS?
Nothing. We're good. All right. Motion to adjourn.
Ooh.
All right. Move second. We're adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Ooh.